shoots. Oh, my goodness, Louis Snedden. Here goes down DK at warm horn. DK shoots. Scores! DK wins it for an end round.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Block Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, doing a lonely episode today as Adam is unable to join yet again. That's why we weren't able to do it on Monday night as promised, as usual. Unfortunately, Adam was unavailable, as was Chase. And Daniel has taken a step away from the podcast for a little bit. So it's just been us three, and the other two boys were not able to join this week, so no worries there. We'll just do it like old time's sake, where it was just me back in the doldrums of 2019 when I used to do the podcast by myself. We are running that back, as the kids say these days. So let's get into it. But first, actually, I want to do a quick announcement, and that is that I will be a guest at a watch party for the Columbus match, which is the road match on April 16th. Kickoff is around 7:30 p.m., so really 7:38 p.m. Match is obviously in Columbus. So there is a watch party at Tin Roof Orlando, which I want to say is a bar. Tin Roof Orlando. And again, I want to say it's a bar. I want to say it's on iDrive. And I'm going to just kind of be like a guest. It was set up by OC Fan TV. Name is Zach. New Twitter account, new content creator on Twitter, has been putting up some great graphics and storylines about each games. Highly recommend you give them a follow on some of the stuff they've been putting up. I really like really interesting storylines, and they follow up on the storylines too. So they'll say, we need to do this for this match, and then the match happens, and then they'll say, did we do this? Maybe, maybe not. So I've really been enjoying it. They invited me to be a guest at this watch party. Would love for you guys to come out and join us. It's an away match, so it's something that we can still do as fans together to support the club. Even though we can't go to Columbus, many of us, we can go to a place in Orlando, and would love to meet some of you, see some of you out there. Tin Roof Orlando, 7 p.m. is when the event starts. Match starts 7:30, Saturday, April 16th. So book it, as they say. So let's get into the match. And I guess the first place to start would be the Antonio Carlos injury. Because we had some good play. Pato scored the offsides goal, beautiful play, loved it. But unfortunately, it was offsides, in my opinion. Ref got the call right. So, yeah, I think it's really unfortunate, obviously. I was really angry at the time. You know, why is Brian Rodriguez making that tackle? That was so unnecessary. He's passing the ball back to Galese. What's the point of that? But honestly, as I've had time to breathe, to let the emotions leave, because I was really angry after this match and during this match, I thought that it was just a frustrating match to watch overall. That kind of foul happens 3 or 4 times a game. The type of foul that you kick a player just to disrupt the flow of the match, just to disrupt the player's flow, just to let them know you're there, kind of assert some dominance, you know, the psychological war that is a soccer match. That kind of foul happens all the time, and players just, you know, they don't get injured. And it's just a weird way he falls, and it's very unfortunate, but I don't think it's necessarily a dirty play from Brian Rodriguez. I think it's just, that's a standard foul that we see. Antonio Carlos falls weird, and now he's out for an extended period of time. The reporting's been iffy. So Austin David, I think it was, or maybe it was Mike Gramajo. It was one of those two on Twitter saying that the club don't know the timeline yet. They're still doing scans, yada, yada. We had that one reporter saying that he's out for 4 to 6 months. We'll see what happens. Either way, any injury to him is difficult to bear. He's been so good for us this season. It's really disappointing for us as a team, as a fan base, to see one of our better players go down. But as a human being for Antonio Carlos, he has had an interesting career. He's been loaned out multiple times by his clubs. He had never really found a club to call his home. We have really trusted in him and given him that kind of, again, club to call his home. And he's really set a place here in Orlando. And he's just skyrocketed with this opportunity and was really playing some defender of the year type defender this season. That's the quality of his play, and just really unfortunate. So I feel bad for him. Obviously feel bad for the team. Schlegel's really going to have to step up big time. Janssen's going to have to step up big time, be the leader of that back line, which he can do it, but he's not Carlos. So a big miss there. And hopefully the 4 to 6 months was a little too early from that reporter, and it's hopefully more of a 4 to 6 weeks sort of thing, because we need Carlos if we want to do anything this season. So the momentum gets kind of pulled out of the game. For us, we were doing really well. The injury happens, 1 to 2 minutes on the floor. He has to come off. We have to get a new center back in. Schlegel comes in. So our flow is disrupted, right? And then the first goal happens a little bit after. Not directly after, but a couple minutes after, I would say. And I've seen a lot of people blaming Juan for the first two goals. And I just want to take this one at a time because, interestingly enough, everyone knows my take on Juan. His offensive output frustrates me to no end, but I gotta be honest, I didn't see an issue with him on either one of these goals. And you're probably screaming, how do you feel this way, Gavin? What is wrong with you? So let's just analyze the goals here. So the first one, what happens? We give the ball away in midfield. I think it's either Schlegel or Araujo chips the ball up towards Urso. Vela gets it, puts it down, turns, beautiful, beautiful ball over the top of Juan. Nothing wrong with that there. I don't think anyone has a problem with that from Juan. I mean, it's a gorgeous ball from Vela over the top to Chicho Arango. So Chicho runs onto it and takes it down to the byline and puts in a beautiful, beautiful cross. Gorgeous cross. And I have more problem here with Janssen than Juan. If you go back and watch the play, my first thought was, where's Schlegel? Because who's covering that near post? That near post by the byline? That would usually be a Carlos, so why is Schlegel not there? Well, Schlegel is following somebody all the way up into the midfield. He's man-marking someone where Cesar Araujo usually plays. So Schlegel's completely out of the picture. Vela's ball takes him completely out of the play. And then it's Juan, Janssen, and Moutinho, the back line. And Janssen, he's watching the ball. He looks over his shoulder to look at Rodriguez, who doesn't even really faint him out. Rodriguez just makes a beeline run to the back post. And Janssen, for some reason, tries to cut to the near post, realizes that Rodriguez isn't going to the near post, and changes his direction to cut to the far post. And that little stoppage opens the space for Chicho to put the ball in to Brian Rodriguez, and Rodriguez just roofs it into the net from close range. The reason people have been big on Juan in this play, from what I've seen, is because he doesn't really do anything to try and block the cross. And while I agree with the frustration that Juan probably should have attempted to block the cross a little better, this is something that our fullbacks have been doing since the James O'Connor era. We have never been using our fullbacks to go out and full-blooded stop crosses from that area of the pitch. Whenever our fullbacks go out there, look, time and time again, they jog out, they don't really put a lot of pressure, they just try and be a body in front. And the reason coaches do this is to be very conservative and to say, we don't want you to go out there full-blooded, and if you get beat off the dribble, then the attacker has an easier cross to put into the box. They're on the byline, they have no pressure, you've been beat, you're behind them. If you're trying to get back, you're probably going to give a penalty away. You know, you're probably going to foul them trying to get the ball back from behind them. So just stand in front, stand them up, don't do anything, you're fine. And we've been doing this since 2019. Sometimes we would do it in 2018 as well with Jason Kreis. It's just, that's what Juan's been told to do, so he's going to sit there and he's going to do it. I don't really have an issue with it. What tends to happen is we never notice it because the cross goes in and Antonio Carlos is there at the near post to put it away. Instead, Antonio Carlos isn't there. Schlegel gets caught upfield, man-marking somebody, and Janssen has a weird hiccup in his brain and decides, nope, I'm going to go near post. Oh, nope, I'm going to go far post. That opens the space for Brian Rodriguez. Perfect, picture-perfect ball from Chicho. Goal. I have no issue with Juan on this play. Really, I don't. So that's the first goal. So let's analyze the second goal. Okay, this one has to be Juan's fault, right? He's the one who heads it straight to their player. not so much. So he does head it straight to their player. But again, let's analyze it. So let's go through it. So first thing I want to point out, we have the ball up the pitch. We have a really dangerous opportunity. I posted about it on Twitter. Moutinho gives the ball away way too easily. He has a clear pass to Facundo Torres just to his left. It's a nice, simple 5-6 yard pass. And that would have made Facundo Torres isolated against the defender. And Moutinho could have made an overlapping run, could have made an underlapping run. We could have had a really dangerous attack. Facundo could have taken the player 1v1. Anything could have happened in that scenario, okay? Instead, Moutinho messes up this easy pass. LAFC gained back possession. They go up the pitch. And Juan gives away a foul. Okay, that's pretty frustrating. We had a really dangerous opportunity. All we needed was a simple pass that any professional soccer player should be able to make. He doesn't make it. Now they have a free kick in our half. Well, they put the ball in. Ball bounces around. We get it cleared. And then Latif Blessing does what every coach will tell their players in a broken play situation. This is what you do. In a situation similar to this. So there's a free kick, there's a corner, there's a set piece routine, there's a broken play, the ball bounces out. Put that ball back into the box as quickly as possible, just to see if anything could happen, anything random, any weird bounce could go our way. So Latif Blessing instantly puts it into the box. Great, that's good stuff from Blessing. Love that. What do we do? Juan goes in to challenge for the ball with Chicho Arango right there. The ball is going into Chicho Arango's path. Juan goes and says, I'm going to just head this ball away because I can't just let it bounce. And when Juan goes to go up for the header and the ball's going, Galese is running out. Why is Galese running out here? That's my main takeaway from this. There's no communication between Galese and Juan. And that's fine. If Galese called for it and Juan decided not to do it, then yeah, I'd be kind of annoyed at Juan. But then you look at the play, and if Juan doesn't head that, Chicho could very well be through on goal. It would take a really good touch from Chicho. He puts his leg up. But if Juan doesn't do it, Chicho's through on goal. And then we're saying, why didn't you head that ball away, right? So then we're mad at him for not doing what he did that led to a goal. Well, the other thing then people are are saying, well, why did he head it backwards? Why did he head it back towards goal? And so I'm like, and I thought the same thing. Why is Juan heading this in this direction? He wasn't trying to. Again, I urge you to go watch the play. Juan jumps up and tries to hit it with the side of his head, completely mistimes it, mishits it. You can tell that's not what he wanted to do. He hits it with the side of his head, and the ball just like goes perfectly into the path of their player. And so, and the other thing is, and this is kind of another, not excuse, but kind of explanation of how this ball ended up going in the direction it did. Look at where Juan is attacking the ball from. Juan is attacking the ball from a diagonal line directly towards the center of the goal. So he is running while attacking this ball in the air directly towards the center of our goal at a diagonal angle. So he's already running back. He's got to try and, what people are saying is they want them to head it away from goal. Obviously, that's what every defender wants to do. But with your momentum going towards the goal, towards the middle of the goal at that, to do that, that's a really awkward, weird motion at full speed. You've got players everywhere. So he just, kind of like what Miguel Gallardo said, he's just trying to get contact on this ball so Chicho Arango doesn't get it. I'm fine with that. I'm 100% fine with that. I'm more worried about Galese running out. Did he call for it? Maybe, maybe not. Even if he did, why is he calling for that? Chicho's right there. I mean, he's through on goal. One touch, Galese's out of his box, and halfway, Chicho gets a shot off. That's probably another goal with his goal-scoring record. If Galese stays in his spot and lets Juan make that header, that ball probably just goes straight back to him, and he just picks it up. So there's a lot that went wrong with this goal. The Moutinho pass, they go up the field, Juan makes the foul. We get the ball away, but Latif Blessing puts it straight back in, and then Juan, like you can go down the list of things that went wrong, and it's just, we had just, the ball didn't bounce for us. In this scenario, the ball did not bounce our way. Everything that could have went wrong went wrong. And now we're what is this, 2-1? So I skipped one of our goals, but I wanted to do those back to back because I wanted to discuss Juan specifically. I don't think Evan Weston helps Juan out here because he keeps saying Orlando gifted, Orlando gifted, Orlando gifted LAFC goals. He must have said it 10 times on the broadcast after the two goals. And the way he was saying it was as if Juan's goal was on purpose, the way gifted, the way that vocabulary sounds. It's like, not maybe on purpose, but it was a mistake. That's kind of what I'm trying to say. Juan made a mistake. And I personally, on both of these goals, I think Juan made the right decision. So on the first one, I think he made the decision that his coach wanted him to make. Now that's, for me, that's a question towards Pareja. Should we have our fullbacks trying to block crosses a little bit more aggressively? Maybe we should. Or maybe we shouldn't, because then Juan will get skinned next game, and then we'll turn around and give away a penalty while chasing back, and then we'll say, well, maybe he should be more conservative. That's kind of the ebb and flow of tactics in the sport and fans. And then the second goal just mishits the header. Galese comes out and maybe shouldn't have, and just bounces straight to one of their players. And then Galese almost gets back and makes the save. He gets a touch on it. So let's go to our goal, right? Let's do some positives here. Pereira making a return as a creative player. I know we've talked about on here, maybe he's more of a build-up player versus a creative player. I didn't buy it personally. Sorry, Chase, if you're listening to this. Sorry, Adam, if you're listening to this as well. He's our creative hub. Right, and we saw in this game just how good of a creator he can be when he is on his day. I mean, the two goals come from him, right? So the first goal is the ball over the top, and make no mistake, this is fantastic movement from Erchan Kara. This is something that we talked about on the scouting video on YouTube when we looked at his highlights and his scouting tape. He gets separation from his defender. He moves around in the final third quite a bit, and this this is something that DK wouldn't have done. This is not a goal that we would have scored. DK would not have made this run. He wouldn't have made that header down. This is just something that we haven't had a presence in the box to hold it up and do something like this. So great from Pereira, great from Cara. Pato is there in stellar fashion, puts the ball in the back of the net with the left-footed volley. Beautiful. 1-1. Gorgeous. Mwah. So now we're 2-1. We've already discussed that one. We're really frustrated. The LAFC have been pretty clinical with the chances they've had. Very, very clinical. And we pick ourselves back up. And we go and we score again right before halftime. And we're feeling good. 2-2 going into the half. We feel we've been the better team. But LAFC have really been clinical. So we're a little frustrated. This goal, I want to point out Cara again. Archon Cara. Because the only reason Moutinho is left wide open is Archon Cara... what's the word I'm looking for? He kind of activates his defender. So he backs into... it's Ryan Hollingshead. Backs into him. You know, that movement in and around the box. Big guy. He has to be accounted for. Kind of like that gravity that DK had. He has to be accounted for. Gets Hollingshead. And then moves into the middle. And Hollingshead follows him all the way over. He doesn't pass him off to another defender. LAFC are already really sucked into that left-hand side of the pitch. And Cara sucks in the right back. I don't know if it's on purpose or if he was just trying to move a defender at all. And it just leaves Moutinho wide open, who slots it home. 2-2, we're feeling good. Great pass from Pereira again. Have to highlight that. And, yeah, we're feeling great. 2-2. So... then we go into half, and again, like I said, we're feeling good. Come out, and I honestly, off the top of my head, I don't remember anything between their halftime and their goal. I honestly don't. Did we create anything? Did they create anything? I think it was just kind of random play, probably some fouls. Yeah. So then they score. Again, clinical. And I have no issues on our end. They were just clinical. Schlegel goes to clear the ball. The ball bounces off his foot awkwardly. He gets blocked off by Murillo. Sanchez just gets the ball and smacks it in the net. 3-2. And this is where I kind of want to stop before we finish off with the match. We're 3-2 at home. We're losing. Nothing's really gone our way. We've had a tough moment with Antonio Carlos going down. And I just want to talk about our home form for a minute. This is something that I've been thinking for a long time. Long time. I'm talking back when we were bad. Why are we so bad at home? Why are we horrible at home? I've been to so many home losses, it's ridiculous. I don't know if I'm a bad juju, but I didn't see my first home win until the US Open Cup run in 2019 against, I want to say it was the Revs, the 2-1 win in that run. That was my first ever home win as an Orlando City fan, and I'd been to 10 plus games at home. But even recently, our home form hasn't been good. I went and pulled the last 15 home matches to go through. I just want to go through these. I would say quickly, but I don't want to go through them quickly. I want to spend some time on this, actually. So, number 15 is a loss to the Red Bulls. We lose 2-1 in a match where we looked pretty poor. And this was a Red Bulls team that was in very poor form at the time. They were playing a 4-2-3-1 that wasn't working for them. Every other team was beating them, and they pulled out two wins on us last season that we would have felt we were the better team at the time when we played them. And so pretty disappointing. We couldn't handle their high press. Next, we beat Philadelphia 2-1 at home in a very close game. Went 2-0 up, and Shabilko got one back, and then it was pretty nervy till the end. So, one loss, one win. Next game is the Atlanta 3-2. We go down early, we claw our way back into the game, we go down again. Atlanta, again, a bad team at that time. Everyone was beating them. They were not in the playoff picture. And then we just needed some Vanderwater magic to pull us through the match. He scores a goal and then gets the assist on the Nani winner. So 3-2, another close win at home. We're only three matches in. Next, we got a 1-1 draw against Miami, who were horrible last season. Next, we have a 1-0 win against Chicago, who were horrible last season. 1-0, got to be better than that against a bad team. Next, 6, we have a draw against Miami, 0-0 at home. Got to be doing better against a bad team. 7, a close win against Columbus, 3-2, who had a lot of injury problems last season. A ton. They were missing most of their central midfield room. They weren't scoring goals freely. They had some injuries along the back line. Molino was injured, as he always is. Columbus, we should have beaten them handedly. Only beat them 3-2. Next, a loss versus Montreal, the 4-2 loss. We know that one. That was just a really bad one. We couldn't handle their high press. We got a red card, yada yada. Next home match, 2-1 win against DC United. This was a match we won with 2 set pieces in the last 6 minutes, the last 6 minutes we got 2 set piece goals. And I remember at the time being really frustrated with how we played. I think I got in an argument with Matt Doyle over this game, because I was like, this game was awful. And he was like, nope, you guys will be fine. That's what it was. We were 1-1 with DC United. I just pulled it up. Janssen scored in the 16th minute, which was a set piece. DC United had scored in the 6th, and then we scored in the 97th minute with a DK header off of a corner. And we played pretty poorly in that second half while chasing the game. But we got lucky. We got a set piece goal. So again, another close home win. Next 3 matches are draws. We got a 1-1 against Montreal at home. We got a 2-2 against New England Revolution, where we were up 2-0 against their backups. They bring their starters in. We draw 2-2. Felt like a loss. And then the third one was the 1-1 draw with Nashville, which you guys know my feeling on the foul. I think it was a foul. Others may disagree. I feel the VAR call was still wrong because there wasn't maybe clear and obvious error there. So yeah, should have been a win, but it's a draw. But as we've highlighted, we've won against some poor teams that maybe we shouldn't have beat, so it kind of evens out a little bit there for me. Next up, we're looking at a 2-0 win this season against Montreal, and then we're looking at a Cincinnati 2-1 loss, and then a 4-2 loss to LAFC this past weekend. So that's our last 15 matches. That comes out to 6 wins, 4 losses, and 5 draws, which is 23 points out of a possible 45. So I went a little further and did some math. That's a points total per game. That's a 1.53 points per game total. So that sounds decent, right? If you're doing that over the course of a season. For all matches, yeah, 1.53, that's pretty good. If you're doing that over the course of a season at home, you're looking at 26 home points. To put that into perspective, last season we finished with a total of 51 points overall. That's what got us 6th place. We got 51 points. So in order to hit the 51-point threshold again this season, with the current rate we're on at home, we would need to get 25 points on the road this season, which is 1.47 points per game on the road. Which means if we continue on in this home form that we've had over these past 15 games, which is a good sample size in this sport, we need about 1.5 points per game on the road. Which, to be fair, we did in our road trip. We had 4 points in two matches, so that's 2 points per game. But that's not sustainable. That's not sustainable, and we're going to need to see a 50-plus point season if we want to make playoffs, I think. If we want to make playoffs comfortably. I mean, we were talking about being a home playoff team. It's like, does a home match matter in the playoffs for us? This home form is awful. We've lost and we've drawn against teams, and we've struggled against teams all that we should have beaten handedly. Again, you look at Red Bulls, you look at Atlanta, Miami twice, Chicago, Columbus. These are all teams we should have beat comfortably at home, right? With how good we are as a team, that we all feel how good we are as a team, and we're struggling against these teams. Now look, we have different attack this season. We don't have Nani and DK. We have Carr and Facundo. We're not a fully built squad. We've got a new midfielder and Araujo. We didn't have him last year. So like, there are some differences, obviously. But just looking at the Pareja era, over these past 15 home matches, we've been awful. And just as a club, we have not done well at home in our entire history. We just haven't. I don't know what it is. I really don't. I don't know if it's... because I don't think it's the fans. I don't know how that would have an impact on our results negatively. Part of me does feel that the club... Or the players or the coaching staff or whatnot, there's always this need at home to play more on the front foot, right? To be the team that's attacking more, to create the chances. It's kind of an unwritten rule in the sport. You're going to want to put on a show for your fans, right? Like in the LAFC game. We started off the match, we were on the front foot, we were the one creating the chances, LAFC were sitting back. That's how a lot of these home versus away matches start. And I think we struggle with that. You know, how many times have we started a match on the front foot at home, had a couple of chances, we don't put them away, and then we end up struggling the rest of the match? How many times have we gone through this template of a match and it ends up not going our way? I think of the Atlanta match where, who was it? I think it was Sebastian Mendez who had like 4 gilt edge chances and didn't score any of them. Or I think of the LA Galaxy match where Nani missed the penalty, or maybe Kleshtin missed the penalty. One of them missed a penalty and we had so many chances, lost 1-0. That was right after a big win against Cincinnati. I think a 5-1 win, that was the next game, the LA Galaxy 1-0 home loss. There's another match against Atlanta at home where we had a ton of chances, couldn't put them away. I think Dwyer missed a couple. Like, and those are obviously old matches. But then Cincinnati, we played well, and then they hit us on the break, we went down, then we're chasing the game and we can't score another goal. And this home form thing is really concerning me, and I think questions need to be asked of Pareja of how do we fix this? How do we make this a fortress? Because right now, Exploria Stadium is not a fortress. Players talk about this is one of the harder stadiums to play in, but they always come away with points. I mean, 23 out of 45 possible points over the last 15 matches, like... that's horrible. That's horrible. I'd have to go and look at every single team over the course, but I don't think there would be a single playoff team that is that bad at home over the course of their last 15 home matches. I don't think there'd be a single playoff team. In fact, I think there'd be a lot of 8th, 9th, 10th place teams better than that, I would venture to say. I'd have to go look at the data. Maybe I will tomorrow, but I just wanted to point that out because this is something I've been thinking about for a while. We are bad at home. It's been in my head since 2019, really. 2018, really. and more recently under Pareja. This club needs to improve its home form. And it's not just being reactive to the two losses at home, but more these bring to light the issues that kind of allow me to discuss the topic. So I hope you guys understood the math there. We're on a rate of 26 home points for an entire season, so 1.53 points per game, which is the rate of the 15 times 17 home matches in a season, is 26 points at home. We would need 25 points to get to last season's 51 points total. Not great. That's really not good. We have to figure it out. As we being the club, I don't have to figure it out. It's not my job. I'm not getting paid to do it. But we need to figure it out as a club. So one thing to think about here. So going back to the game real quick. We're down 3-2. And I think 4-2 is a little, well, I think it's very unfair of how the match went, in all honesty. Again, LAFC were clinical. Every shot on target was a goal for them. That's how clinical they were, basically. That's extremely clinical. That's just the word I can describe it as. I think it's important to remember, in kind of the fallout of the match, that at 3-2... Crippo made a really good close-range save from a Pato back post header from, I think, a Van der Water deflected cross. He also made a pretty decent stop against Cara, even though Cara was kind of falling backwards. So Crippo makes two big saves for them at 3-2. Could have made it 3-3. And then Moutinho misses a wide-open header at the back post. Yes, the ball came through a bunch of bodies. The ball went, I think maybe Tesho was on at the time. I think Tesho's going for the ball and it just dips. Everyone misses the ball and Moutinho's at the back post and he can't see the ball until the last second. So he mishits it, heads it straight into the ground, bounces up over the net, but still a wide open header. A little bit of a better contact on the ball there, and that ends up in the net, and we're 3-3, and we're feeling like we're a lot better today. We're feeling a lot better today than we are right now. So it's important to remember that, because we did still create chances. Yes, they were from crosses, but we still did create decent chances just from headers. And obviously headers are very low percentage chances per the statistics. So that kind of keeps me more in a positive mood when thinking about this match. And then obviously they just get the counterattack goal. That's just a game state counterattack. We had all of our bodies forward. They counterattacked and scored, and it's 4-2. So I think that just looks way worse than actually how the game panned out. I honestly think a 2-2 or 3-3 scoreline was fair for this game. Really 2-2, because LAFC usually would have messed something up on one or two of their goals. To be that clinical, I don't want to use that word, but that's just what they were, in build up and in front of goal, it's a little bit of luck, a lot of bit of skill. It's the best way I can kind of put that out there. So let's go ahead, and there's one more topic I want to talk about before I get into fan questions. And someone put out a post on Twitter. I think they deleted it now, so I won't shout out who it was, but they said, when is it time, and this wasn't directed at me, but I did want to discuss it because we discussed it a little bit in the Twitter group chat, and they said, when is it time to question Pareja? And I don't want this to be misconstrued as, is it time to sack Pareja? When is it time to sack the coach? But when is it time to question the coach? Just hear me out here. I think that time is this season. I think that we talked about it in I think the preview or maybe during one of the off-season episodes, but he's been backed financially. Yes, it's going to take time for these players to gel, and that's fine. but we can still question him. We can still question him on decisions. We can still question him on trends that we're seeing, like the home form. Because as the coach, that all falls on him. We can explain away each match for whatever reason. You know, the New England Revolution match, we can blame it on Urso for not running because he's dead tired. Why is he dead tired? Because he didn't get pulled out of that match. Pareja. You know, we can talk about the Portland match. We're 1-1. We're 1-0, sorry, on the road. We can talk about Pareja defending the box. We saw some people calling, why are we sitting so deep defending? I felt that was the right thing, but it's still a possible question to ask, right? So you look in the LAFC match. Why are we... This is just a continuation of our struggles at home. Why are we struggling so much at home to win games? Cincinnati, another example of that, you know? So we're already seeing 2, 3, 4 things that we can question Pareja about this season. I think now's the time to question. I don't want to be questioning our coach when it's clear and obvious that we need a new one. We shouldn't start questioning then. We should start the questions now. We should start thinking about these issues now as a club. Okay, these are things that aren't working. We need to get in discussions with Pareja. So I'm talking to Ricardo, I'm talking to Luis Muzzi, I'm talking to our decision makers. Now's the time to start asking these questions. Okay, what's going on here? Let's look at our home form. Why is this happening? You know, yes, we can probably explain each match away individually, but as a collective, we need to look at, why are we having to explain away these matches? Okay. We need to do that now before it's clear for everybody to see that, hey, Orlando City are struggling. They need a new coach. I don't want to be Toronto last season where we're firing our coach when we're bottom three in the table. That's not the time to start questioning. I think now's the time to start questioning. It doesn't mean he's got to be sacked. It doesn't mean anything. But putting some pressure on your coach and saying, we want better, it's okay to ask for better out of good. I think that's something that a lot of soccer fans forget. It's okay to have good and still want more and still want better. Just because Pareja has delivered playoffs to us and brought us out of the depths of despair does not mean we owe him to just sit here and just be average if he's being average. I'm not saying he is, but if he's just going to get us 4th through 6th, 4th through 7th, 4th through 8th, maybe. We don't know how this season is going to turn out. But if he's going to sit here and deliver us 4th through 8th, I think fans have every right to go, hey, I don't want to be 4th through 8th. I want to be 1st. I'm not down for these whole matches where I pay my hard-earned money to see us get smacked by LAFC. I want to win all our home matches and go on the road and struggle. I don't want to be good on the road and struggle at home. That's not fun for me, the fan. I don't want to wait until Toronto. I want to do that now. So I'm saying I want our club to do that now. And I think our fans have every right to kind of say, yeah, something's not right here. You can ask Daniel. I've been talking about some of my issues with Pareja behind the scenes with him quite a bit. I'm not going to get in depth with it right now. I don't want him sacked. I'll say that. But there are some things that I think he's lacking as a coach that if we had Pareja plus those things, we would be a better team. Now, we can say that for anything. If Schlegel was Schlegel plus X, Y, and Z, he'd be the best center back in the world, right? So that's, you know, but a different coach could probably do better, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. That doesn't mean I want him sacked, because I don't think that better coach is available right now. So, yeah. So that's my thoughts on that. Let's get into some of the questions, though, before we get out of here. And first and foremost, thank you to everybody for sending in questions. I really appreciate it. Love answering some of y'all's questions. So at LMW_337, the commander in cheeks. Lee, you are great, man. He says, although he hasn't scored, he's shown a lot of versatility. What do you think of Kara through 5 games? Other than goals, what else would you like to see him do more of going forward? So let's tackle that first one. He's shown a lot of versatility. What do you think of Kara through 5 games? I've been very happy with him. Obviously, would like to see the goals come. At FL Data Dude responded, a longtime listener, says, for what it's worth, I heard someone somewhere this week that the team has been downplaying his injury and he hasn't been 100% most of the season. So that's a rumor. I don't know if that's true, but if he is still somewhat injured, it wouldn't surprise me, as he has like looked a little bit lumbery at times. And in the scouting video, he looked a lot more smoother in his running patterns and his movement. I felt like we started to see that more in this LAFC match. Obviously, we talked about that with the goals. I've been happy with him. His touch is good. He uses his body really well. He buys us fouls. He's everything that we said he would be on the scouting report. He just isn't really getting in behind and scoring those goals from runs yet. But that will come with time. And understanding of defenders and the spaces where he's going to be able to succeed. Other than goals, what else would you like to see him do more of going forward? I would like to see him pop up, not in the center all the time, which is a weird thing to say, right? He's a huge guy. But I'd like to see him going out to the right side where we tend to build up play a lot and maybe combining with Juan a bit and then getting Juan in. I'd like to see him combining with Urso over there, maybe going out to the left and combining with Pereira. Right now he's staying very central, which is fine. It's taking up bodies, but go out, combine, turn, and get into the box. I think I'd like to see a little bit more of that, but if he is injured, I can see why he's been kind of static in staying center to the pitch, or maybe that's just the kind of striker he is. So great question, Lee. At the English Lion 1, how do I cope with the pain? You realize that this match wasn't terrible. Yes, it sucks. Antonio Carlos got injured. We're going to have to figure that out in the back line. That sucks as well. But it's just 3 points, right? It's just 3 points missed at home against, in my opinion, the best team in the league. And we pretty much matched them, in my opinion. They were just more clinical. Sorry for saying it again. And we just go again next week. Maybe it's just because it's Wednesday night. And I asked this on Monday morning. Two very different emotional states for these people asking the questions. So how do you cope with the pain? Time, I guess, is my answer there. Orlando City UK, Taylor at Orlando_CityUK says, why are we conceding so many goals at home? Last clean sheet before the 2-0 against Montreal was 0-0 versus Inter Miami. I think that goes back to my question on the home form, or my topic on the home form, in that we have to be the ones going out and controlling the match and going out and playing on the front foot. That leaves space in behind. We aren't comfortable with that kind of defensive scenario, and we get scored on. So I think of the Montreal 1-1 game last season, where we were up a goal and then Montreal go down the right-hand side. I want to say it was Sebastian Mendez, I want to say. Or maybe it was Nani. It was somebody over on the left-hand side, gives the ball away. Zachary Brolkiard gets it, gives it to Mihailovic, gives it back to Brolkiard, and they score. Right, so it's like that's a transition opportunity that maybe on the road we wouldn't give up because we'd have more defenders back. Instead, we're at home, even though we're 1-0 up, we're pushing bodies forward, sort of thing. That's honestly why I think we're conceding so many goals at home, which is interesting, right? Because Pareja likes to say he wants to be the protagonist, right? But I think Pareja's definition of being the protagonist is being the one in charge of the match. And not necessarily being the one on the front foot in a match. You can be in charge of a match defensively, like we were against Portland, until they got the BS penalty given away from Pareja. We were 100% in charge of that match. We would have sat there, and if Pareja doesn't give that penalty away, we're winning that game 1-0. Point blank. We were going to win that game. We were very comfortable. It was a needless penalty. Individual mistake. That's his version of protagonist. He wants to be in control of the match. You can control the match without the ball. But at home, to be the protagonist for the fans is to have the ball, is to play pretty soccer. And while we can play pretty soccer at times, that leaves us exposed at the back. And I think that's why we concede so many goals at home. So good spot there, Taylor, on the last clean sheet being the 0-0 versus Miami before the first match of this season. And just to put that into perspective, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 home matches without a clean sheet before the Montreal match. So the 7th match. So interesting stuff there. All right. At FL Data Dude has 2 questions. Is it time to look for a new right back? No, we are fine in the right back department. We have other things to worry about. Actually, no. No, you're right. Now that I think about it. We've figured out. We've already gone full blown towards what we needed to figure out. Unless we're not getting Gaston Gonzalez, which we are. We're getting Gaston Gonzalez for the attack. We already have Bato as a backup striker with Tesho as third string. We already have Vanderwater on the right with Facundo Torres an option out there. We have Benji on Gaston Gonzalez on the left. Maybe a backup 10. Maybe another backup center back. But we're at the point now where I think the next thing to look at is either is Juan going to improve or do we need to get an improvement on Juan? Because I think we've seen this season that Kyle Smith is not the answer. He's not looked great in his cameos. And he barely played at the end of last season. So I think it is time, this upcoming offseason, to look for a new right back. What would I like to see? I would like to see a right back who can get into dangerous positions in the attack and do something with it and still be decent on defense. I'm not expecting someone with the speed of Juan who gets in behind the way Juan does, but someone like a Moutinho offensively, possibly. Someone with a bit of technique, can put in a dangerous cross at times, but still be a little bit better defensively than Moutinho. That would be the kind of mold that I would want to write back. And then I would honestly unleash Urso and our right winger a little bit more to control that space that Juan usually takes up. Move Kara over, move the left side over a bit, and be a little bit more balanced on both sides of the pitch. Now, one thing to note here that I haven't talked about yet is Gaston Gonzalez and how I think he's going to change this team. I don't want to get into it too much right now because I want to discuss it with my co-hosts. But basically, I think he's going to bring a lot of balance to our attack because he's going to get into those dangerous positions that Juan gets into on the right side, but on the left side. He's going to get to the byline. He's going to be able to put dangerous crosses in and a little bit more quality or a lot bit more quality than Juan in those positions. Very young, physical, likes to tackle, likes to work hard defensively. You can see why Pareja likes him. I think he's going to start a lot of games, even though Adam doesn't. I think he's going to be that left wing position that Facundo Torres is just kind of occupying right now for the time being, since Benji hasn't looked too great over there. And the thing is Benji has come in, right? I'm going on so many tangents because these are just thoughts hitting my mind. So I'm sorry, guys, but like Benji's looked really good over there off the bench, right? He's come in, he's had fresh legs, but he's done nothing with it. He's done absolutely nothing with it. Right, so he was on the left wing against LAFC. He got in behind the defense, took way too heavy of a touch. and then the ball just trickled back to... Oh, no. He took way too heavy of a touch, and then he had to reach for the ball, and then I think the goalie just stopped it easily, or someone cut it out easily because of his heavy touch. Gaston Gonzalez is going to get in behind, and he's already going to be on his left foot, so he's not going to have to take that heavy touch. He's not going to have to cut in and make it obvious. Gaston Gonzalez is going to be able to go two ways, and that's going to be really difficult for the defenders. And he's going to be able to take it to the byline and put a cross in, or cut in a little bit and then do something with it. And that's going to bring a danger down the left-hand side that we haven't had for a while. We haven't had it with Nani for the past 3 years, really. And before that, we didn't have it with Miram when he was here for that little bit. Maybe since Rivas, when he was playing down that left-hand side. And that is just straight speed over there. Speed and a left-footed winger. Just an out-and-out winger. And that's going to be so crucial to balancing our attack, to having danger on two sides. You know, why was LAFC so comfortable with sending everybody to our right side to leave Moutinho so wide open? That's because we build up through our right side. That's because everything we do is our right side. If we stretch them out a bit and make them focus on Gaston Gonzalez on the left, Juan on the right, getting in behind, that's going to leave space in the middle for Urch Ankara and Mauricio Pereira. So Gaston Gonzalez is going to be really, really important. And maybe, weirdly enough, Gaston Gonzalez is the key to unlocking Juan to go all the way back to Florida Data Dude's question. Is it time to look for a new right back? Gaston Gonzalez might be the answer to the Juan issue, because he'll make runs at the back post for Juan to sky into out for a goal kick. You know, he'll make runs at the back post just to be there and watch the ball sail over his head. I don't know. But I think he's going to open up a little bit more space for Juan. And all Juan needs is that extra yard, and he's going to be in behind defenses even more than he already is. So just a thought there. Sorry for the long tangent. Hope that answered your question. But if Gaston Gonzalez isn't the answer, then yes, it's time to look for a new right back, because the rest of our squad is looking pretty good. He also asks, is Thomas Williams ready to step up as the number three center back? I'm going to say yes, only because, and I'm going to defer to the experts here, the club feels that way. And the way I can tell the club feels that way is he's not playing OCB right now. He's up with the big leagues. He's up with the big boys. He was on the bench against LAFC. If they needed to bring him on, he was the option. That tells me they think he's ready to play MLS soccer. He's not preferred, but he's ready. So I'm going to defer to their expertise there. But I do think he's ready to step up as the backup center back, and he will get play time. He will. Moraima, let's see what she has to say. I know it's early, never too early for me, but should we be worried about our home form? Oh. Moraima, from you and I are thinking alike right now. Yes, we should be worried about our home form, because we're playing terrible at home. Not just over this season. It's not early. It's a 15 matches in a row we've been struggling at home. The other thing that I wanted to point out in my little spiel about the home matches, really quick, Moraima, and I hope that answered your question, that spiel I did earlier. We have only won one match at home by more than one goal in these last 15 matches, and that's our win against Montreal this season, the 2-0 win. All those other matches, any of our wins were by one goal. Again, not good enough. So there we go to that. And then finally here at the end of a long solo pod, at Tyler Dookie says, how screwed are we? I don't think we're screwed. This was the best team in the league, in my opinion. They had a great offseason getting in a ton of MLS talent. They already had the attack working. They were ultra clinical. we just go again against Chicago this Saturday, and I think we're going to come out with a little bit of a chip on our shoulder based on the LAFC result, based on what happened in the Chicago match with the Urso goal that got stolen from us. We're going to be angry. We're gonna want to come out, and we're going to want to set things right. And I think we're going to win this game. I think we're going to win it by one goal. Honestly, I think it could be a 2-1. Chicago looked good this season, really good defensively, not so great offensively. So, yeah, I don't think we're screwed, but I do think it's time to ask questions of the head coach. So, I will leave it at that. Don't forget, guys, 7 p.m. Saturday, April 16th. So, two Saturdays from now. Tin Roof in Orlando. Is it a bar? I'm going to look it up right now. Tin Roof Orlando. Orlando Bar, live music, Tin Roof. It is, oh, it's an Icon Park. Okay, 8371 International Drive, Icon Park. Be there, I'll be there. Thanks to Zach for setting up the event. Follow OCFanTV22 on Twitter. Really hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I rambled on a bit, but that's the inner thoughts of my existence. So hope you guys enjoyed and have a wonderful rest of your week, and I guess I will see you after hopefully a Chicago win. Thanks, guys.
The biggest man in MLS comes up huge!